but people were still reaching out from Europe wanting to sell them in their boutique gift stores. And I thought, this is so cool, this is so cool. And then I would pack up, you know, they said they wanted like 20 puzzles. I would pack them up and the shipping would be like over $100. And I'm like, this is eating into your margin so terrifically. There's no way that we can do this with you.
Hi, I'm Chloe from Zenbox, and I'm on a mission to get brands talking about how post-purchase operations affect the customer experience. And importantly, how to deliver on promises that mean you create loyalty that drives repeat purchases. Welcome to After the Buy Button, the show that focuses on post-purchase operations to help you improve your customer experience. Today, I'm excited to be talking to Lindsay Simmons, the owner and founder of Wonder Puzzle Co., which on their website states puzzles of images to take you beautiful places mentally and emotionally, which is really lovely. And they are truly beautiful puzzles. So Lindsay, welcome.
Thank you.
It's great to have you on the show. Can you tell us how a bit more about Wonder Puzzle and how it came about?
Yeah, absolutely. Wonder Puzzle just came from my hobby. I love putting together jigsaw puzzles, and I feel like it's a calming activity, and it's something you can do alone, or it's something you can do with friends and family. And I simply ran out of puzzles that I enjoyed putting together. So I don't want to put the same puzzle together multiple times. So I ended up buying them, and I couldn't find any more to buy. And I thought, well, how difficult is it to make a puzzle anyways? And how difficult is it to make art, you know, find art that I would want in a puzzle? And so I just kind of put one foot in front of the other and frankly, finally made a decision to just go for it. And once I did, that was like July of 2019. I was on a long bike ride in Colorado. And I just said, okay, instead of questioning, shouldn't I, I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to make a decision moving forward. And I started contacting some artists, and some said no, some said yes. And by some, I mean two said yes. So I went with that. And the minimum order quantity was, in my mind, such a huge number. I was quite terrified. And I just said, okay, I'm not going to do this. And again, I got scared and I was pulling back. And then I came back. I said, no, I made a decision. I'm going to do it. And so I purchased the minimum order quantity for these two puzzle designs. And that was in November of 2019. The inventory finally arrived to me in January of 2020.
Wow.
Yeah. In January, I had sales that were like to friends and family, which is very sweet. In February, I had virtually nothing. And by the end of March, quarantine, pandemic, you know, I started to sell over 100 puzzles a day and was completely sold out by April 22nd of 2020.
Oh my goodness.
So just a few months from launching, I was completely sold out.
Wow.
So,
so
it was a fun, really high, intense learning period because I had never had a business before or anything like that. And I was still working my normal job, you know, my 9-to-5.
So what are you thinking? So you've started out, you know, you're going to go for it. You've kind of got that entrepreneurial vibe. You're stood, you know, waiting and ready to start your business and like, you know, growing from as you would expect a new business and starting out to friends and family. And then suddenly this incredible boom and, you know, it hits you from nowhere. So what are you thinking and feeling at that point? And how do you even manage to get all the orders out and everything?
I will tell you, the learning curve was so steep, and I am so grateful that I had a partner that kind of knew what was going on, who was doing the logistics. We were shipping out of a warehouse that my dad had access to in another state. So it was far away from me, and they were shipping out, but they're not used to doing what they call eaches, which is like one unit.
Right.
So they were used to doing like a big shipment, you know, of things. And so this was a learning curve for them as well, for that warehouse as well. And there was no visibility. There was no software as I have now to see all the orders that are coming in, all the orders that are going out, the duration of time that it takes for the order to ship. being able to go in there when an address is incorrect and change the address myself, to be able to add a gift message, you know, all of these things that customers want and expect from you. We were moving so fast and there was no visibility for me to be able to make those changes. And so frankly, if there was a wrong address, there was a wrong address. I could not get it changed pretty much. There was no gift messages.
Right.
And the shipping costs were absolutely extraordinary because we didn't have the benefit of a 3PL that would have a third party logistics fulfillment center that would have certain rates. So, I mean, maybe I would make a couple of bucks on a puzzle, but probably not. I mean, that was probably, I mean, I was really over subsidizing for shipping.
Right.
So with no transparency of what was going on. So financially, it was not a super exciting time. But just to see that there was like interest in my product and what I had put out into the world was phenomenal. And that's definitely the fumes that kept me going. I mean, there was no question about it. I absolutely loved it. And I loved being able to provide a solution that created a sense of calm when people were in a pandemic and full of anxiety. And they would write me all the time and they would say, thank you so much. This puzzle really gave me calm, took me away from the news, took me away from social media. I felt so good while I was doing this. And it's beautiful. And it's uplifting. The colors are beautiful. It's an inspirational image of women. I felt connected to myself while I was connecting the pieces.
Right. Yeah. So it's, you know, it's a really purpose-driven brand. You know, it's about finding space for yourself and kind of disconnecting, focusing on kind of a singular thing. I think you mentioned on your website, it's kind of like this form of meditation almost. You know, you're just doing this action, focusing on one thing and cutting off from the rest, which is, turns out, is what's needed in the middle of a pandemic.
Totally. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, it's needed all the time.
Right.
Like, I'm a daily meditator, so I'm already I'm an early adopter, I guess. I'm definitely not an early adopter to meditation, but I'm a big proponent of meditation, and I think that puzzling is like meditation. And so I've coined this term puzzitate, which is puzzling and meditating. And there are true revelations that come to you when you're puzzling, just like when you're meditating. And so I've shared a couple on my Instagram account.
Uh-huh.
The things that come up when you're puzzling and you're like, light bulb moment.
Oh, I mean, yeah, and definitely resonates with the people who are looking for puzzles and doing puzzles to have this experience and, yeah, get away from everything. So that part of the purpose of the brand relates exactly and directly to the way that customers will experience the brand, the images that you've carefully selected and worked with the artists, and also kind of those operational elements. So the touch points that they would experience. So, you know, the packaging and things like that. So how do you approach that element of the business and how do you ensure that that remains consistent?
It's hard to remain consistent. I'll say that mostly because I'm making changes to improve things all the time.
Right.
So consistency is maybe not what I'm going for. I'm going for upgrading, you know? so, you know, I think about the evolution of just the box, for example. I started off with a much bigger box because I thought bigger was better. Bigger was more expensive, but it didn't make it better. Then I decided to make the box thicker so that it could withstand all of the shipping that happens, you know, and the boxes get thrown around inside other boxes and you need to have a really strong box. So then I made the box stronger. And then I decided to seal the box with a plastic wrapping, like a tight plastic wrapping, because the boxes would rub together when they were shipping. And so sometimes they would put little scratches on each other. And so by wrapping it in that cellophane, I guess you would call it, that is mitigating that as well. So, but it even starts with choosing the art, you know, choosing the art, choosing the piece size. People want 1,000-piece puzzles. I don't tell anyone, but I don't like 1,000-piece puzzles. And it may be a fact, that a 1,000 piece puzzle takes 4 times longer to put together than a 500 piece puzzle. So the people who want 1,000 piece puzzles are really asking for a lot, in my opinion. So I've got probably, literally 20% of the puzzles are 1,000 piece puzzles. But 500 pieces is a good entry to get to people who are just starting puzzling or who, like me, just want a 4 or 5 hour activity and don't want like a 15 to 20 hour activity.
There's a lot to that.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. And it kind of might just feel like another item on the agenda, you know, that needs to be picked up.
Right.
And that's how
right.
I wanted to feel like, going back to like, it's a positive thing. Mm. It's, you know, and I also think there's like a lot of zen in taking apart your puzzle and being like, the work is done and everything is impermanent. You know, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. You take it apart, you put it away, and there's a sense of completion with that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Harder to get when you're doing a 1,000-piece puzzle.
Yeah, definitely. If I was doing a puzzle like that that was 1,000-piece, I definitely think it would turn into this thing. I've got to finish the puzzle. You know, and you don't want that to happen. I guess this whole idea of mindfulness and the completion aspect, you know, you feel good, you've completed it and now you put it away, and that's like, you know, part of it. There's so much more to puzzling than you would know.
I know, there really is. I mean, when you really get into it, it's kind of deep. just sort of picking art and things like that, you're also mm-hmm. thinking about your customers and who they are, and you know, to me it's really important to have connection with those customers. So I usually do that through Instagram, but there's other ways too. Sometimes I'll send art over to customers that I know are like, you know, are kind of interested and waiting for maybe the next wonder puzzle. And I'll say, what do you think about this one? And do you think it'd be good in 500 or 1,000 pieces? Just to kind of engage them and just to make them part of the process. And I don't consider it unprofessional. I consider it actually meeting the needs of the customer in a way that I'm driving it, I'm leading mm-hmm. it. I'm just looking for feedback because I want them to love it.
Yeah, that's a really important part of retention as well. You know, that kind of that whole feedback loop and everything that they've experienced so far of the brand. So these are people that I'm, you know, customers who have done your puzzles and are looking forward, like you said, looking forward to the next ones. But there's a community there of people who also do puzzles and what they would like to see on the puzzles and, like you said, how many pieces, etc. So, you know, I think, again, it comes back to making sure that the customer is right at the center of everything that you're doing all the way through, from the very beginning of choosing, like you said, the artwork, through to, you know, how you make sure that they experience the right thing at the brand and you make them happy and they have a good experience ordering from you too. So if I can take you back to after you have had this massive peak after lockdown and you have sold out. So you experienced all of these, everything, all of these issues, shipping costs, I presume shipping times as well, because all of that obviously increased over the period. So, I mean, when you've got to that point, you've sold out and you've experienced all of these issues, what do you do then?
It's a clean slate. And that was something that was super refreshing to me at the time because things were moving so quickly. I mean, literally, we were punching in tracking codes with our own fingers hundreds a day, like 100 a day, for example. Yeah, I mean, like my shoulders were up to my ears and I was like this. I wasn't sleeping, you know, I mean, the whole thing, right? In one way, it's like a dream, right? In another way, it's like, oh my God, please. When I finally sold out, it was April 22nd, and I went to sleep in the middle of the day for 4 hours.
Oh.
I can't say I've ever done that as an adult.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was just like really exhaustion. But when I sold out, I said, what the heck is a 3PL and how do I find one? And so that's when I hired someone, a consultant that I found on Upwork, to find me a 3PL, not even really knowing what one was. And then she highlighted three for me, and we had conversations with all three. This is in the US. And then I decided to go with this one. And once I discovered the software and the transparency and the shipping rates and the inventory management, I was over the moon, because literally what we were doing to count inventory was counting the boxes that were remaining. It's terrifying, frankly. I mean, I look back, I'm like, oh my God, how far we've come.
So you're introduced to this world then that takes you from counting boxes, literally, you know, on a piece of paper to, I mean, yeah, I mean, 3PLs take all of that away for you. It's third party. So, you know, the standard. But I'm glad that you said you kind of had this experience of hiring a consultant, because that's actually a really, really difficult thing to do, is go and look for your fulfillment partner, because there's so many there, and there's so many different things that they specialize in. You know, they could specialize for particular products, particular industries. But also you've got ones that are very traditional in that they are pick, pack, deliver. You know, they do that very particular job, but aren't necessarily, you're not always going to find with a 3PL that they are enhanced by data and technology. And you're not always going to find that you can see, like you just mentioned, you know, the inventory management system that comes with that as well, which is obviously something that's helped you immensely.
Immensely. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's so, looking for a 3PL, I now have two 3PLs, right? So I have one in the US and I have one in the UK, which is Zenbox. And I'll tell you, because of my experience with my 3PL in the US, I was looking for some extremely powerful software, something that could give me all the transparency that I've come to know, need, and desire.
Right.
And so when I found Zenbox, I said, you can talk all you want to me about sales or about, you know, whatever, but I really need to see your software. And not until you pull back that curtain can I tell you whether or not I'm interested, and will I divulge much more information about my business to you. So that it was key for me is that, and also just the assuredness of knowing, what are the current problems with logistics? Because there will always be problems with logistics. And I mean, in the UK, we're dealing with Brexit, and now with the EU, is it IRSS, the VAT situation that's going to, the taxing that's going to happen in the EU?
Yeah. I mean, that's the,
there's so many things, right? There's so many things. There's COVID, there's Christmas, there's, you know, it's nonstop. And even the 3PL that I use in California, they started to go mostly automated, robots picking, robots doing the picking, because they had such high cases of COVID or quarantine requirements. And then they had the social distancing requirements, physical distancing requirements. And so they said, you know, we can't keep up with the orders unless we start using robots who can work more closely together.
Wow.
So, I mean, just, there's been an incredible shift, I think, in 3PLs in how they've been managing everything that's happening, whether it's Brexit or COVID, and international shipping has been really challenged.
Yeah. So when you first came, you had this consultant, you were, just to get a better idea of your business and how you set up, were you always shipping worldwide? It was always a global company that you kind of always had that set up, and so your first steps were then sorting out the US warehouse, because that's where your product was, and then going from there, or where did you start?
Okay, so I didn't start international shipping until probably 5 months in, when my second batch of inventory came to the 3PL.
Okay.
So first round, I was only doing domestic shipping, but again, like talking to the customer and the touch points and things, like they were like, we need international shipping. When are you going to do international shipping? We want, you know, I was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? I can't even get it sorted out in these, you know, lower 48s over here. So, It took a while, but I was super excited about being able to offer it. But then the cost is so great. The timing is so long. And I mean, when I say so great, it's $15 for one puzzle to get to Europe from California. $20 for two puzzles to get to California, to get to Europe from California. And then it can take 3 weeks, you know?
Right.
And,
yeah.
And there's not a lot of tracking in between. It's really just a fly by thing. Hope and pray.
Yes, which is, it's not ideal. And, you know,
Zenbox is fixing it for us.
Which is, it's good to hear. It's good to hear. And of course, there's a lot involved in that. You have this business that's almost, you can test things in domestically in America, and you sort of have an idea of what people are expecting from their experience of receiving the parcel. And then the European side is almost following that. And then, you know, exactly. I mean, first of all, you know that you're going to be able to provide shipping at a decent rate for people that are actually going to not click on the website and go, oh my God, I can't afford that shipping. It's almost, I presume it gets to the point where, you know, the product is, you know, a similar price to the shipping.
Yeah.
That's definitely a challenge to overcome whilst you're expanding internationally. But also, you have that demand almost for you preceded the ability to ship to Europe. So how did that work? And was it just a crazy case of the lockdown, you know, it spread from America, or was there a key point that made the demand boom in Europe as well?
Yeah, definitely. So I had been receiving a lot of B2B requests. So retail stores in the UK in Europe wanted to sell the puzzles. And that had been happening from early on, maybe month four, month five. And keep in mind, like, I only had two puzzle designs. I have 10 today, but I only had two until May of 2020. In June, I then had five. Okay. But people were still reaching out from Europe wanting to sell them in their boutique gift stores. And I thought, this is so cool. This is so cool. And then I would pack up, you know, they said they wanted like 20 puzzles. I would pack them up and the shipping would be like over $100. And I'm like, this is eating into your margin so terrifically. There's no way that we can do this with you. And I'm so sad to say that. So fast forward to where we are today, but where we're going to be able to do that from Zenbox, no problem. And it's going to be great. And so we're going to open up to whole new retailers in Europe, which I'm just delighted to. I mean, I've got a list of like 35 that I'm going to email straight away as soon as we get inventory to Zenbox, you know, which arrives in 3 weeks. So what happened with Europe in terms of direct to consumer was different. Mm-hmm. I had received orders, right? But not that many. Then there was Flow Magazine, Flow Germany,
right,
featured Wonder Puzzle Co. in October. And all of a sudden, I was selling like crazy. 30% of my sales were going to Europe by November.
Wow.
It was unbelievable.
That's a shift.
Huge shift. And when I'm talking about Europe, it was amazing because it started to be Germany, and then it was Switzerland and Austria and France and Italy. And then it started to go Turkey to Israel. And it was just really expansive. So what was interesting, like in my mind as a business owner, as I said to myself, there's something in Europe, there's something there. And I want to see if I can sell more in Europe. And maybe even open a 3PL. Sounds crazy, but maybe I'll open a 3PL in 2021 in Europe, depending on how sales go for Christmas. And what I meant by that was depending if I have enough cash,
right,
to be able to move inventory to set up a whole new 3PL place, a whole new 3PL location. Mm. And it became so dang obvious because 30% of my sales were going to Europe. I was like, I don't have a choice. I have to. In order to keep these customers, I have to set up a 3PL because I already talked about how the expense was so great and the time to deliver was so great. And of course, these people are ordering during Christmas, during COVID, internationally. I mean, it's taking so long for them to get their order. And I was just pulling my hair out. It was so frustrating. There's nothing you can do, you know, once you ship it off, there's not as much you can do, and it's a long way to go.
Right.
So it was really cool, the direct-to-consumer idea, and like maybe in 2021 I'll consider opening up a European 3PL, and then here we are.
And I guess it definitely sort of comes back as well to what you're saying about having the cash to kind of do that is almost a lot of what I hear from, you know, companies that are growing and, you know, just starting out, and that you're waiting for the next order or set of batch of orders to come through so that you can then inject more cash and get more orders, and kind of it's almost a really kind of cyclical cycle that you're on, because you then can't, you know, and if you don't have the data, like your kind of problem at the beginning, as you explained, you experienced all of the orders and a lot of business coming through, but you couldn't see what that was, where they were ordering from, and you didn't have the data around the tracking of, you know, ship it off and wherever it goes. So it didn't enable you to make any better decisions because you still had no idea what was going on.
Totally. Yes. 100%, which she said.
Right. So, so you get to this point, and I think that's kind of exactly as you said, your kind of your first American warehouse, your warehouse in the States and 3PLs enabled you to do that. And so you knew what you were looking for when it came to Europe. So now you're in a better decision where you can see what comes in, where it's going, where you should be focusing your efforts in terms of, you know, coming back to the start of customer acquisition again, because you're all the time building this great sort of community of puzzlers, but you're also expanding and reaching new audiences, which is really interesting, because you're on Etsy and Amazon, but am I right in saying that most of your orders are coming through your direct-to-consumer website?
You are right, but it's been a long journey.
Right.
So I will definitely say, like, during the height of the pandemic, when there were over 100 orders a day, they were coming from Etsy.
Okay.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, yeah, finding you through different ways and different methods and channels, really.
Yeah.
Like you've said, kind of Flow magazine must have started it, and then they're looking for puzzles during lockdown. And so there's kind of so many yeah. reasons why it boomed for you.
yeah, definitely. So the website started to take off probably in like July or August, and it surpassed Etsy.
Okay. Yeah. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And so starting from where you started, I presume, when you then took on the American 3PL, was that the first point when you could understand your inventory a little bit better and see how those channels came in and where your orders were coming from, so that you had a better picture of your stock management, if you like?
Yeah, it's true. And just to say, it's also the integration with the site, and the site is built on Shopify. I switched from Squarespace when it was very uncomfortable to do so. Mm-hmm. I set up on Squarespace, and there were reasons to switch to Shopify that just kept trickling in, and mm-hmm. I kept pushing them away. Like, I don't have the time. I don't have the cash. I don't have the technical expertise. Like, please, just can't we be happy at Squarespace? And you know what? I just couldn't deny it any longer. I had to also shift that.
Right.
So shifting to Shopify was really great. And the integration with 3PLs is much more seamless. Like with Zendbox and with my 3PL in the US, it's a much more seamless integration. So you see the inventory is integrated and they speak to each other.
Absolutely. And I think that kind of goes to show the setup, actually, that Shopify is ready with a lot more apps and integrations that enable businesses such as yourselves to do that and to be able to get hold of the data that's running through the website.
I find Shopify to kick Amazon's butt in so many ways. I just... I'm so grateful to Shopify because it allows entrepreneurs like me to become entrepreneurs, retail entrepreneurs, e-commerce. There are still so many things with Amazon, and I've hired professionals to help me go through it. And I've hired professionals to just take over the Amazon part. And even still, I just am constantly underwhelmed. But Shopify is, I think, an amazing product. And if you have anything to sell, I feel like so long as it's a quality product, Shopify can help you move forward to the next level.
So that's a real kind of good key learning point if somebody's in that similar situation, kind of thinking, well, what platform do I use and what do I need to think about? Actually, you need to think about your integrations and you need to think about how data flows from one part of your business to the next and back again, you know, because it's got to be updating those stock levels and things. You don't want to be, I mean, particularly on Amazon, you don't want to have a a stock level that isn't real, because we all know about the pains of being suspended on an Amazon account, for example. So that's a really, really great learning point that somebody might be able to pick up on. If there was kind of maybe one or two other things that you would recommend to somebody in a similar situation to yours? I mean, hopefully we're never going to experience a pandemic like we have just done. But what would be your recommendation to people in a similar situation that are looking for growth and kind of maybe setting up on in new territories, new marketplaces and things like that? What would be your kind of couple of bits of advice?
I would like to hear the problem specifically, but most of the time what I say is just, you have a problem sitting before you and you have several different solutions to it. What I have done historically, and it does make a person a little crazy, but I've just run all three of those at once. So if I see three solutions, I run all three at once to see which one dies first and which one is still
Okay. That's really interesting.
I know. So it sounds a little crazy. But so for example, with finding a UK fulfillment center, mm-hmm. I saw three different, well, first of all, it was a European fulfillment center I was looking for, not a UK. So let's be honest about that. So what I did is I thought, okay, I can find a EU fulfillment center. I could find a UK fulfillment center where they speak English, which is my native language, or I could upgrade my international shipping so that there would be more tracking, and there's services for this. Mm-hmm. And so what I did was I just did all three, and I ended up with Zenbox. Like, you took me to the finish line. But I'm keeping one of those expensive international shipping places for mm-hmm. Canada and Mexico in South America. Okay. So that works out and solves some of my problems that I was experiencing with shipping there. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. Just kind of run all solutions out to their logical conclusion, essentially. Yeah.
Okay. So you don't actually know what might work for you. And I guess almost kind of as you first said, when you went to answer the question, was I do have to know the exact situation to tell you an answer. But I think overall, what you're saying is, you know, you do need to test and see and figure out exactly what's going to work for your brand.
Definitely.
As opposed to just saying that this is the right thing for all of them. I think that's a really important point that a lot of people do kind of, they're looking for advice and how to make the next step without making any mistakes. But that's a true entrepreneur, right? Is making all of the mistakes and giving it a go and seeing what happens.
Totally. I love Warren Buffett. He's from Omaha, Nebraska. So we have a special connection there. But he said, and I've heard him say this many times. He said, don't be afraid to fail. And don't be afraid to admit failure, but you have to document it. You have to understand why it failed so that you don't repeat it. And so that is something I've been hearing, you know, for 20 years. And I feel like it's so true that there's no such thing as failure. Like, I live my life. I have no regrets. Did I do this or do that somebody might look at and be like, tis, 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 that's not the right thing to do? Yes, of course. But do I regret it? Absolutely not. Because it all led me to where I am today. And I'm really happy with where I am today. And I know tomorrow is going to be better, right? But that's the same thing with entrepreneurship. It's like, unless you try something, you don't know whether or not it works. You could say it was a mistake that I didn't find a 3PL at the beginning, but I wouldn't know what I love about a 3PL had I, you know, right? What I appreciate so much. I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think when you're a small business, you have to probably, you have to start without a 3PL. I mean, you have to do it in your, you know, bedroom.
Yeah. It's often not right, is it? You know, you don't have the stock. Like we said, you don't have, you're not sitting on the money. You don't have anywhere to, you know, you need to operate on a very kind of small time and build it and build it. And that is a very natural evolution of a business. You don't offer, you're right. You don't often start with a 3PL just right there for you. But I think that kind of summarizes a little bit quite nicely, actually, to lead into my final question, which is about where you get your inspiration from. You've already mentioned Warren Buffett. I don't know if you're going to go down this, down that line, but you know, the kind of do you look to any resources? Are there any books that have like guided you or inspired you, and you know, helped shape your outlook? Maybe other kind of podcasts. Is there anything that you would, and that, you know, that you live by or that you would recommend to others?
All right. Well, while you've been talking, four have popped to my mind, but my God, I'm sure everything I do is influencing me, and I'm, you know, constantly, filling up my brain with different stuff. Aren't we all? But, okay. So the first thing that I would say is my big female role model entrepreneur is Dame Anita Roddick. So she set up the Body Shop, and I mean, you as a Brit probably know all about her, but I will say, like, that was definitely my influential upbringing. When I was 12 and 13 years old, my whole wardrobe was the Body Shop t-shirt. Shirts. I would have like against animal cruelty, like, you know, splashed all over me all the time, right? That was, it was so instrumental for me. I feel like she was such an inspiration. And every so often I remember her as an inspiration. Mm-hmm. But now I feel like with Wonder Puzzle Co., she is the inspiration. I would have never seen myself here without seeing her there. So she's amazing. She was an activist and an entrepreneur. And she said so much in the way that she sold products. So she's amazing. Definitely a role model for me. Unfortunately, as we know, she passed away, but she is still a role model for me. yeah. The other one I was thinking about was Benetton Ads. I don't know if you remember Benetton Ads, but I'm 40, so I do remember Benetton Ads. And they were people of all different colors. Mm. And even they had like albino people with red hair, people with extremely black skin, people perfectly Asian, like just everything all smashed up together in their clothing. And it was like so gorgeous. I mean, stunningly gorgeous. And so I feel like I would like to emulate that in my puzzles in some way, you know, I'm not selling clothes, so it's a little bit different, but honoring diversity for the beauty that it is right. Something that I find just so eye-catching.
Absolutely. I think it kind of adds to your brand as well that you have these kind of clear messages, and like you mentioned, there's a lot of kind of female empowerment and in you know, the images that you've got, and like you said, a lot of kind of diverse representation, which is great that actually you've combined your medium, really, that you've used puzzles to communicate something else, which is really important, and that does illustrate the entrepreneurship again, kind of doing something different but doing it for or with a cause and things in mind, which definitely ties those two inspirations of yours together. So yeah. That's really lovely to hear.
Thanks. I do feel like it is an extraordinary gift to be able to create something and put it out into the world, because what I'm creating is the way that I want the world to see and be. Mm-hmm. You know, and so to honor that diversity and to honor women and to be uplifting and to be colorful. These are all the things that I want like my world to be. So I'm just sharing it. And thank God there are people who also like that, you know?
Absolutely.
So it's pretty fun. I know. Well, the other thing I want to say is Peloton has been a huge inspiration for me.
Well, they're a brilliant D2C brand. You know, they're really, you know, pushing everything. And that is all about their marketing and people coming to them for one specific thing over and over again. They're doing it right. Definitely.
And I feel like I can just get on the treadmill, get on the Peloton app, and I can listen to what they're saying. And it's like they know what I'm dealing with as an entrepreneur that day. And it's like therapy while you're getting your workout and getting your endorphins on. So I feel like that's also a great influencer for me. Just saying.
That's good. I think that's a brilliant note to end on as well. That is like energy.
Totally.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you.
You too. Thank you.